And now on BBC Radio 4, the classic serial. And today we begin the three-part dramatization of Patrick O'Brien's The Mauritius Command, a stirring tale of naval battles and political intrigue based on the Royal Navy's campaigns against French forces in the Indian Ocean in the early years of the 19th century. David Robb stars as Captain Jack Aubrey with Richard Delane as the naval surgeon and spy, Stephen Maturin.
The Mauritius Command by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatized in three parts by Roger Daines. Episode 1.
Dear Lord. There's no weight lost in those posteriors. Tip the beam at 15 stone, they were. Would I be addressing the celebrated Captain Aubrey at all?
Stephen!
Myself!
How very happy I am to see you. Old Stephen, where have you been? How are you? Where have you been all this time?
I've taken the waters at Caldas de Boie. They made me as supple as a fawn again.
Splendid.
I was able to make quite a number of valuable observations on the cretins there.
The cretins?
Boie is largely inhabited by idiots, my dear.
Not the only place. Not by a long chalk. Look at the Admiralty. A general as First Lord. That is stark raving lunacy for you. You're staying with us, of course. Have you seen Sophie?
I've not.
Then come. She will be somewhere in the house.
I did pause at your kitchen door, ask the young woman was the captain at home.
Bessie. Yes. It is the damnedest thing, Stephen. I managed a ship's company of 300-odd, easy as kiss your hand. But can I get the least notion of discipline into my domestic establishment?
Well, hearing the sounds from within, the massacre of the innocents did come to mind.
Ah, that will be the twins.
How old are they now?
They seem to have been here forever. quite old. Sophie will know exactly.
And you've moved your observatory. Did it not answer by the house?
Yes, it did. But I tell you what it is, Stephen. From up here, you can see the Solent to the Wight.
Ah.
The tip of Gosport and Spithead. I have a new 6-inch speculum. 3 months I spent buffing and grinding the lenses with the finest Pomeranian sludge to finish them off.
Ah, you are the speculum maker of the world, Jack.
Tonight, I may show you Jupiter with it.
Does Sophie not mind your stargazing?
No matter how late. But staring at the Solent ain't astronomy. She don't say anything. But she thinks I am pining for the sea. It brings her low.
And do you pine much?
You will not mind walking in through the scullery.
Never in life.
No ceremony.
Only to touch my granddaughter's spoon. Do not shake your head at me, miss.
Mrs. Williams' recovery has been providential.
Yes. Mapes Court is out at rent. And it is a comfort to Sophie to have her mother here, I believe.
Yes, you may well pack your bag, miss.
I dare say, though, you would like to look at the garden before going in.
I should like it of all things. And the bee.
You are a dishonest and spiteful Welsh hussy, miss.
It is odd, but they seem to have piped down these last few weeks.
You refer to the bee?
Yes. I have not been very close since I tried to take their honey, but they seem not to be about.
How long?
It must be more than a month since I was stung. Be careful, Stephen. They are Tartars.
Ah. Yes. I'm afraid it is the fell wax moth.
Is there something I should have done?
Not that I know of.
Sophie and I value them extremely. As your present.
I shall bring you some more bees of a bolder stock.
That is our cow.
I thought it must be a cow. For milk, I make no doubt.
We look forward presently to vast quantities. And butter, cream, veal. At the moment, she happens to be dry.
Nor is she gravid. In reverse, indeed. Lean. Pharaonic. Cadaverous.
She refuses the bull. He is game enough. Oh, Lord, yes. But she has nothing to say to him. Then he flies into a hellfire passion, raging and tearing up the ground. And we go without milk.
Is her behavior so illogical, Jack? Reflect upon the continual wearisome pregnancies, the price of a momentary, and I may say aleatory, pleasure. Were I a female of any kind, I should beg to decline.
Yes.
I speak philosophically.
Yes.
And do not think of asking Captain Aubrey for a character, for you will not get one. I
That is the fourth cook lost this year. You know I was no friend of the cat, Stephen, at sea, but rot me, I can see it has its uses.
Oh, Stephen! How happy I am to see you. Come in, come in. I shall be down directly.
I'm sure she will be down directly. You would not credit the din they can kick up if things are not to their liking.
Oh, no, not on the settle, Dr. Maturin, if you please. Oh. It is so bad for the cane.
Here, Stephen, take mine. I should perhaps, Sophie may need. Down directly.
I brought the settle with me from dear Mapes. No doubt you will remember it, Doctor. From the summer dining room?
I do, ma'am.
I like to see it give Captain A's cottage something of the air of a gentleman's house. Is that chair comfortable enough for you?
Admirably so.
I could not bear to leave so valuable a thing to my tenant. A worthy enough man, no doubt, but something in the commercial line. Such a one as would not scruple to sit on it.
Ah.
The clock. Also, I brought from Mapes. It is the most accurate in the country, I believe.
A handsome regulator it is. Could it be set a-going at all?
Oh, Lord, no, Doctor. No, no. The works would instantly start to wear. Captain A is handy in the house, but to repair such a clock, the cost would be prohibitive to have it done properly. Yes.
For the moment, they are quite presentable.
Oh, but darling.
Very fine children, my dear. I should have known them anywhere.
Oh, I can never tell the one from t'other. I probably have Charlotte.
Oh, that is Fanny.
Oh, Captain, not to know your own children, your very flesh.
Is that so, my dear? Shall we fly?
Jack, I beg you, do not.
Or Stephen.
It is liable to do them great harm, flinging them up into the air, sir.
They like it, laugh and crow and so on, almost human.
Oh, the little darling.
Oh, where can be the harm?
It will serve only to confuse their intellect.
Don't stuff, Doctor.
Don't tell me so.
And a girl, when grown into a woman, has greater need than a man of her intellect.
We've always
dreamed. My dear, Stephen has studied the cretins of Bohee.
Oh, well, I shall never do it again.
No, ma'am. It's a grievous error to throw children to the ceiling.
I was thrown into battle first before my before my voice broke.
It's not the same.
Well, who can that be? Ma'am, would you?
I?
Take Charlotte, I mean.
Oh, Fanny.
Yes. While I go to the door.
There, my poppet. Yes.
How I wish you could open to a ship, Stephen.
My dear, what is the voice of a poor surgeon amidst the councils of the great?
We saw it in the paper that you were called in when the Duke of Clarence was ill, Doctor.
We thought that perhaps...
His Highness is in bad odour with the Admiralty, madame.
He spends hours with his telescope on the hill, staring at the sea, Stephen. Oh, he's so...
The boy from the Crown and a damn odd letter. Lady Clonfert presents her compliments to Captain and Mrs. Aubrey and would be most grateful for a passage to the Cape. Promising to take up no room and to give no trouble whatsoever. Flatters herself that Mrs. Aubrey, as a fellow sailor's wife, will understand and support. Ah, certainly she may have a passage to the Cape whenever I happen to be going there.
Jack, a word with you, if you please.
You have been up to something.
Were you to be ordered to sea, brother? I collect you would rage not nor curse, snatched though you would be from domestic felicity.
I should kiss the messenger.
This I had supposed. I have, in fact, been up to something, as you put it. Do you know the Boadicea?
38, yes, of course. Weatherly, though a trifle slow.
A frigate, I make no doubt?
She's fitting foreign for the Leeward Island station. Charles Lovelace has her.
Well, she's to be diverted to the Cape. Captain Lovelace was to have taken her there to form part of a squadron thence into the Indian Ocean.
Was to have, Stephen?
The balance of power in those waters has recently been entirely upset by the arrival of four new French frigates, which have already taken two Indiamen and clearly threatened the whole of our eastern trade.
So the squadron Lovelace was to have joined...
...is intended not only to counter these enemy frigates, but also to take their bases away from them.
Mauritius?
And La Réunion, the last French possessions in the Indian Ocean. I was to accompany the force, together with the island's proposed new governor.
It has always seemed unnatural to me that islands should not by nature be English.
I was in a position to offer a certain amount of advice, Medea. Captain Lovelace is much what caressed by the Admiralty, but mentally and physically it appeared to me that he was not fitted to the political side of the task.
Nor has he any notion of crosscut harpins. They would make the world of difference.
I have no conception of what you're saying. No matter. Captain Lovelace is now on shore, afflicted by an obstinate tenesmus. In spite of my colleague's efforts and my own, his malady is like to keep him there. I suggested that Captain Aubrey... if you would relax your grip, Jack. Thank you.
A ship!
There were some very frivolous objections to do with seniority in the squadron and flying of some kind of flag.
Commodore's broad pendant.
Yes, some trifling mark of distinction. I carried my point, but as always, several people had to be consulted. It is evident that at least one has been talking.
A broad pendant, for the love of God.
The rumour has already spread. This Lady Clonfort's application to you confirms the worst.
Clonfort is on the Cape Station, captain of the Otter.
Always the same thing. Gabble, gabble, blab, blab, like a pack of geese upon a common. As though the French were deaf, dumb, blind, and incompetent.
Oh, Lord Stephen, I am a different man.
You're not to mention this, Jack. Not to Sophie, not to any other person.
But I must start looking to my sea chest, at least.
Of course you must not. Not until the port admiral's messenger is come with your orders. I appear and you have a ship? What must Sophie conclude? Or anyone of the meanest intelligence? I have been undone before by the chatter of cushioned fools in London. I still bear the scars.
Then I suppose I had better go back to the observatory.
You cannot be seen until you have your orders. You're as transparent as a bride.
And I can train my glass upon the Portsmouth Road. Do you think the messenger will be long a coming?
So long as he outpaces Lady Clonfort.
Lord Stephen, I wish I could get out of that. You cannot refuse a brother officer's wife.
Refuse a lift, you mean?
What else? I'm married now. It don't signify.
Go, Jack. Watch the road. Sophie will soon enough lose her husband to his natural element.
Boadicea, June the 13th. 1809. Off Madeira, 30 degrees north, 1550 west. Winds light, east by south, sea moderate. At 8 a.m., sighted two sail to east, made chase. At 10, engaged enemy frigate, Hebe, 28.
She strikes!
Cease fire, Mr. Seymour! And well done!
Cease fire there! Cannot you see she has struck?
Cease fire, damn you! Do you think it's the Honourable Artillery Company? Pass the word for Mr. Akers.
All this banging of great guns for so pitiful a result.
Oh, come, Stephen. It was a very pretty morning's work. A handsome little victory. Only 2 weeks at sea. Wounded James Ashton, ordinary. And William Bates... Marine.
How pretty you were to understand an elegant economy of means. I cannot congratulate you, Jack.
What a rattle you are, to be sure.
A little small slip of a French frigate, and it embarrassed among the rocks. Rocks upon which I am not to be allowed to set foot, for there is not a minute to be lost.
We were trying to salvage her prize, Stephen, the Guinea Man.
Oh, yes, and an infamous backing and filling before she was even approached. In spite of her captain's ardent pleas.
What I know, Stephen, and what you do
not. Not a minute, and 47 are wantonly thrown away. Invaluable minutes of scientific observation that will never be made up.
Those minutes lost gave Boadicea a right to an eighth of the Guinea Man's value, as opposed to a mere letter of thanks from her owners.
I see this makes you a happy man.
Well, as happy as anyone who has made two charming captures and sent off a prize crew with them. Including eight sodomites, three notorious thieves, and a parcel of inveterate skulkers and sea lawyers. Not to mention my first lieutenant, Mr. Akers, to command them. In my official letter here, I have commended his conspicuous gallantry.
Did not observe any such.
Nor did I.
Sir, I am very much obliged to you.
I have every confidence, Mr. Seymour, that you will make a fine replacement for Lieutenant Akers. Pray God he and his charges arrive safely at Gibraltar.
I meant that, sir.
So the Boadicea finds herself in need of a new second. Mr. Johnson, you have passed for lieutenant, I believe.
Oh, yes, sir. On the first Wednesday in August, 1802.
No friends to speak for you, eh? Well, 7 years is too long. I shall give you an order as acting lieutenant, and let us hope that Admiral Bertie at the Cape will confirm it.
Sir, thank you very much, sir.
For we are bound for the Cape, gentlemen. And round the other side of it, there are four 40-gun French frigates waiting for us, which they will be well worked up, you may be sure. Now, today's little brush was very well in its way, but I scarcely suppose that any one of us could call it pretty.
Not quite in your Minorca style, sir. I was a midshipman in Amelia, sir.
Was you, though?
When you brought the Cacafuego into Mahon, Lord, how we cheered you.
Well, I'm glad it was not her that we came upon today, Mr. Seymour. The Boadicea's gunnery, gentlemen, is pitiful beyond all description. By the time we reach the Cape, I trust that every man and boy on the muster book will be able to pull an oar, hand and reef a sail, load, point, and fire a musket or a gun. Teach them their duty, gentlemen. Then we shall be in a fair way to meet any French frigate.
Bring forward the first who would enter the dominion of mighty Neptune.
Here is one, Your Honor. Do with him what you will.
I know what I do with you, darling.
Now, boys, we're in time.
What is your name, my man?
Arthur Willoughby.
Brush him!
Oh, what do you call that?
What age are you?
8 and 20.
Brush him! Speak, man, speak!
I'll say no more, you put that muck in my mouth.
Amphitrite, if he will not speak, you must put him overboard.
Overboard he goes, my lord and master! Traitor!
No, no, I can't swim, Your Honor, no! No!
Dangle him from a good rope, that he may drown slowly. Take him down!
June the 26th, 0 degrees, 1420 west. Ceremony of crossing the line. 123 souls made freemen of the equator. Light seas, clear, fine, tagansel wind, nor-nor-west.
A double broadside in a trifle less than 2 minutes. A good deal faster than some ships, I know.
Thank you, sir.
Tolerable accurate, too. But we will do better, Mr. Seymour. I will have what I value above all things, a mortal rate of fire.
Let me not interrupt your assiduous oozes, gentlemen.
That is the end of the piece, Mr. Farker.
Well, is it? I'm afraid I should not know. Materiam superabat opus, I believe.
Shall we play again, Joe?
Oh, what might our guest like?
whist? Or chess?
Something more English. Handle, perhaps?
My dear Captain Aubrey, I fear I would not give a farthing candle for him. Nor your Haydn, Mozart, what was that Italian fellow now?
Boccherini.
Yeah, him neither.
You cannot possibly dislike the man.
I can and do. Intensely when he pins my king on a rook with his lurking knight. Most other times, however, Mr. Farker is a valuable, eager, perspicacious companion.
I shall not be altogether sorry to set him down on shore.
He must first capture the islands of which he is to be governor. You must resign yourself to his company for a while longer, yet.
When I was a lieutenant, messing with the rest, I used to put up with men far, far more trying than Farker. His Latin. What did he mean about our playing?
Oh, compliment. The execution was better than the work.
You see, he has no ear at all.
Little to the left, if you please. I believe I see a cephalopod among the weed.
I dare say I've been in command too long, Stephen.
Oh, for all love, what more can you desire? You say belay and he belayeth. I could do no better myself. Do not tell me you're dwelling upon whom.
No, no.
Dread of the French?
Certainly. They make my heart die within me.
The cephalopod is gone, the thief.
Row gently, Joy. And I should tree on my little net.
What is it in your mind?
The possibility of a pendant.
And a not understand you.
A pendant, and what comes with it?
Brother, the ship is at this moment a perfectly good pendant. Surely you must have noticed it.
What I mean is the broad pendant.
We shall row clean through my weed if you go on at this unconsidered pace.
The Commodore's broad pendant, Stephen. What comes with it is high command.
I believe I said when I wrested you from your Sophie and your little bald-headed children that you should lead a squadron, did I not?
You did. But as we get nearer to the Cape... Do you see... You are bred up to the command of a single ship. It comes natural. And with it, the playing the great man. The loneliness.
I've heard you speak of this many times.
But high command comes sudden without experience. Each of the captains under you is God the Father of his own quarterdeck. You can neither choose them, nor get rid of them.
Slow, Jack. That is a seahorse.
Nelson could do it. Easy as kiss my hand. A band of brothers, you know? But handle them wrong, and you have the devil to pay.
So, that is Africa.
By the mark! 50!
Pangolins, Mr. Farquhar. Camelopards. Peerless aardvark.
Mr. Johnson, I believe you may begin to reduce sail.
Reduce sail, sir.
Clew up the main and fore courses there!
That's flat rock, Mr. Farquhar. That's what we call Noah's Ark. Far over there is Seal Island. You will like that, Doctor.
Birds without number, the ostrich at their head.
Yeah, and there is the Cape of Storms itself, I make no doubt. Far astern now, sir. We came round precious close in the night. Now, here on the larboard bow... No, the larboard, Doctor. You have Simon's Bay. The moment we have Admiralty House Square, we'll begin our salute.
Would that be a line of battleship?
Oh, I doubt any 64 would stand in the line nowadays, sir.
Nevertheless, it is a most imposing vessel.
She is the Raisonnable, built 50 years ago. Were she to fire a full broadside, I dare say she would fall to pieces. Indeed, we carry a greater weight of broadside metal, though Boat of Seer is but a 38.
You astonish me, sir.
She will be part of our squadron, as will the two 36s to leeward of her. Sirius and Nereid. And that little old brig of war, the Otter.
Flag signalling, sir. Captain, repair aboard flag.
So prompt. Truly, there is never a moment to be lost.
Acknowledge, Mr. Johnson. And pass the word for my coxswain.
I am sorry, sir. He is drunk.
Damn him. I shall look a proper flat. I'm summoned to meet Admiral Bertie without my right barge crew.
How can the Admiral possibly know?
Mr. Farquhar, that is exactly the job of an Admiral.
Carry on with the salute, Mr. Seymour.
Bar one!
Here you are at last, Aubrey.
Sir.
I'm very happy to see you.
How do you do, sir?
I dare say the papers are for me.
Yes, sir.
Well, come along. We'll have a look at them in the cabin. Well, you must have had a tedious passage of it.
Tolerably so, sir.
But did you have any luck on your way down, eh? They used to call you Lucky Jack Aubrey in the Mediterranean, I remember.
We saw barely a sail, sir. But we did have a little brush off the dry salvages.
Take anything? Here we are.
The Hebe, sir. 28. Our old hyena. She'd been playing old Harry with our trade for a few weeks, but we clapped a stopper over her capers.
Well, I'm hardly glad of it. I was a midshipman in her before the age of carronades, my God. Oh, damn these seals. Sit you down, Aubrey.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, I've been expecting these. I shall send to the governor at once. You cannot be too careful with these political gents. You have one aboard yourself, I see.
Mr. Farquhar, sir. He is to be the new governor of the Mauritius.
Once you have taken them, eh? Mm. Well, I trust your luck will hold, Aubrey. Things are worse than ever they were before you left England. The French have snapped up two more homeward-bound Indiamen.
Lord, sir, that is very bad.
Yes, it is. They were worth a mint of money. And it will get worse yet unless we can bring it up with a round turn and smartly too. Now, you know Rodriguez?
I do, sir, though I have not touched it.
We have seized and garrisoned it for you as a base. You can water there. It's only 300 miles west to Mauritius.
May I ask what intelligence we have of the French, sir?
They are Venice, Mons, Caroline and Boulogne. New 40-gun frigates, all of them. They also have Canonier, 50, but she's old. The Grappler, she is a brig they took from us. Several avisos and a few smaller things.
Powerful squadron, under the right command.
The frigates are a scourge, Aubrey. Separately or in pairs, they are ranging across the whole damned Indian Ocean.
How much of the eastern trade can we convoy, sir?
Not enough. We do not possess the ships. You can't catch the French at sea. They could be anywhere. So you must either destroy them in detail in their home waters or take their bases away from them. They are using Port St. Louis or Port Southeast in Mauritius, St. Paul in Réunion, but you can't blockade them forever, Aubrey. You don't have enough ships either.
What do I have, sir?
Well, Boadicea, of course. Sirius. Captain Pym. Regular as a clock, Pym. Nereide, only a 12-pounder and getting on in years. Corbett keeps her in fine order, though he is rather undermanned. Otter, too, is in very good fettle. Lord Clomfort has her.
Oh, I know Clomfort.
Do you now?
We served as lieutenants in the Agamemnon.
A very dashing officer, even if he does have strange notions of dressing his men. Otto is a fast, useful 18-gun sloop, and he handles her well. Raisonnable, too, I can give you, though not in the hurricane months. She cannot bear a hard blow. So, in the general way of things, three well-worked-up frigates and a powerful sloop should not be reckoned out of the way to deal with four Frenchmen.
Certainly not, sir.
I have to warn you, Aubrey, should you hoist your pendant, I cannot let you have a captain under you.
I should not expect it, sir.
This will be a tough nut to crack, but cracked it must be, and at the earliest possible moment, go in and win. There is probably a knighthood for you, a baronetcy even. Should you like a baronetcy, Aubrey? And if you fail, well, it is the beach and half pay for the rest of your life.
Where did you find the flowers?
Up a mountain.
Where are they?
Dissa grandiflora.
Orchids. Will you take away a drink?
Thank you. I believe I'll stay with my negus.
I am Macadam of the Otter. I saw you at the hospital this morning.
Maturin of the Boadicea. What is it that you have in your bottle, colleague?
A brandy they distill hereabouts. Raw, rot-gut stuff. I drink it experimentally, not from indulgence.
Indeed.
Indeed, yes. Strabinius and others allege that a man dead drunk on grain spirits, be they whiskey or vodka, will fall over backwards. On brandy, he falls forwards.
Were that true, it would tell us something interesting about the motor centers.
This is my third bottle.
I honor your devotion to science, sir.
I give not a fart in hell for science. Medicine is an art, or it is nothing. Medicine of the mind. That is proper medicine. For what is your physical doctrine but a pack of murderous chirurgical tricks?
The tricks often appear to work, sir.
They may with luck suppress symptoms, but no more. The true fountains at Arago of 9/10 of your vicious constitutions of the body, the mind. And what heals the mind? Art. Art is my realm, colleague.
True it is, I have observed a number of inexplicable remissions. They may be said to derive from the spirit or the mind of the patient. Equally, many a man has let go his hold on life as if decided.
Tell me now, have you ever remarked ever upon the inverse relationship of constipation and cowardice?
Was that not in your book on hysteria?
You have read it, sir?
With great applause.
My patients aboard the Otter would make up an informative volume in themselves. Most of them, since strict to are mentally deranged in one form or another.
Really, most of them?
One in particular.
a case I should describe and name were it not for professional secrecy. A fascinating and positively subtle chain of symptoms.
You've fallen sideways, colleague. I shall note the experiment as inconclusive.
Oh, my fool of a steward has broken the coffee pot.
And it is a crapulous morning for us both.
I could not get back aboard until late in the middle watch. 20 miles I rode for an interminable drinking conference with the governor. Mm-hmm. Pack of generals. Remarkably stupid, even for foot soldiers. More than 20 miles. All on a damn screw that flung me down 3 times and spoiled my best Nanking trousers.
Met with Barrett Bondon on my way back to the ship last evening.
Did you? I had no idea old Bondon was here.
More yet, he is in companionship with Preserved Killick. Aboard the Nereid, they are. And both of them wish to return to you.
Oh, how very, very pleased I am. It will be like old times.
All tastes are to be found in nature, we're told. It is to be presumed that they like the brutal, arbitrary and tyrannical exercise of power.
I shall have a coxswain that is not inveterately drunk, and a steward that breaks no damn coffee pot.
Bondon was so good as to row me home.
You know, I've rarely regretted anything so much as having to part with them. Mind you, will Corbett ever let them go? He is devilish short-handed. And a man like Bondon is worth his weight in gold.
Captain Corbett seems to think not. Bondon was moving stiff from 50 lashes.
What? Flogged Bondon?
Mm-hmm.
Flogged my coxswain? By God, I... Oh. Oh, Stephen. My head seems to be made of hot sand.
Sure you can order Corbett to release them.
My orders have not arrived. No word about my pendant. So here I am, hanging up in the air. Perhaps the Admiral does not intend I should command at all.
Perhaps we might borrow the gunroom's coffee pot. You'd feel better then directly.
Yes.
Mr. Seymour's compliments, sir. The Commander-in-Chief's flag lieutenant has been seen putting off from the shore.
Admiral Bertie desires me to say, sir, that he was taken unwell just after last night's meeting.
Ah.
Yes, sir. He was therefore unable to give you your orders as he had intended, but he has dictated them to me this morning from his bed.
So you know what is in them, I dare say.
I do, sir. And may I be the first to wish you joy of your pendant.
August the 18th, Boadicea, at anchor in Simon's Bay. At 4 p.m., hoisted the Commodore's broad pendant and took salute. At 5 p.m., summoned aboard the squadron's captains.
Give you joy of your pendant, sir.
Allow me to offer my felicitations also, sir.
No more fitting a man to fly it, sir.
Why, thank you, gentlemen. I'm happy to see you. And to tell you that the squadron is to proceed to sea with the utmost dispatch. I should be obliged for a general notion of each of your ship's states of condition and readiness. Captain Pym.
Sirius is well found in general, sir. She badly needs careening, though, and we are having a great deal of trouble with her water tanks. They leak amazingly.
You have those newfangled iron affairs, do you not?
And a damn trouble they are. If there is one thing I detest more than the enemy, it is innovations. We have rummaged her hold to come at the tanks, but even working double tight, sir, and with the best will in the world, we can scarcely be ready for sea before Sunday.
Very well. Captain Corbett?
Nereid is fit to sail the moment she has her water fill, sir. As you know, she is old. My carpenter tells me her naval futtocks could be removed with a shovel. She's also certainly iron sick, both fore and aft. I'm 63 hands short of my complement.
Oh, that is a very shocking figure, to be sure. But let us hope the next homeward-bound Indiaman will put in and solve that difficulty.
You are forgetting, sir, the company's ships no longer touch at the Cape, not since their late disagreement with government.
Very true, Lord Clomfort. Thank you. And how is it with the Otter?
The sloop I have the honour to command, sir, is always ready to put to sea.
Jack. Jack, I have been sadly remiss.
You have whipped the wrong leg off a patient.
What? Oh, always this whipping off of a leg. It's my belief that for you people, the whole noble art and science of medicine is summed up in the whipping off of legs.
In what way, then, have you been remiss?
You are become the great man. Virtually an admiral.
Well, I am Commodore, Stephen.
Give you the joy, my dear, with all my heart.
I did mention it before. If you recollect, I have spoken once or twice of my pendant.
So you did. But in my ignorance, my deplorable ignorance indeed, I believed the pretty flag of leadership was connected with the vessel rather than with the man. The man was the senior captain that led the squadron. But now I find that you are promoted. And I give you joy.
Stephen. If I explain, will you attend?
Yes, sir.
You have not attended in the past, Stephen, when I have told you about the Navy. Only yesterday I heard you give Mr. Farquhar a very whimsical account of the difference between the half-deck and the quarter-deck.
Was it not right?
It was not. Now, this Commodore Lark, I am not, as you seem to believe, promoted at all.
Not?
No. Commodore is not a rank, but a post. J. Aubrey does not shift from his place in the captain's list by so much as the hundredth part of an inch.
A post, you say?
I hold it for the time being. But during that time being, if you follow me, I am, as who should say, an acting temporary admiral.
That must warm your heart.
And as you have understood, I command the squadron. I should not say this to anyone but you, Stephen. In this enterprise, I have to depend upon others.
You mean your subordinate captain?
That is what high command amounts to.
I know your scruples, Jack, and I honor them. Yet believe me, brother, when I say that this is no time for them. Our orders are to work openly together. I, the politics, and you, the force. We must speak openly. Do you look for full, unreserved support from these men? From the Admiral, let's start with him.
Bertie is a jolly old boy. Not the lively wenching captain I knew in Port of Spain, but he's been as kind and obliging to me as I could wish. Confirmed at once my acting order as lieutenant for Johnson, that was a most handsome compliment.
Come, Jack, be free with me.
He will back me to the hilt, I make no doubt, so long as all goes well, for it is entirely in his interest. He dearly longs to be a baronet, by God he does.
Let us imagine you make a mistake, what then?
I should not be surprised to find myself again plain Jack Aubrey, captain.
You have no very high opinion of Admiral Bertie's heart.
His head is clear enough. You know he has added a trifling paragraph to my orders, which means he is cut into a share of any prize we take. But I would not go so far as to disparage his heart.
No, no. What else afflicts your spirits, then? Corbett, I dare say.
A slave driver.
The beetle within has quite eaten up the man.
I like a tight ship, and of course a clean ship. But the Nereid is total perfection.
To the extent that it oppresses you?
I inspected her. I saw the mute sullenness in her crew. Her officers anxious, jaded, harassed. I say not a word against Corbett for courage, mark you. He's proved that time and time again. And it was Nelson himself had him made post, you know. Nelson saw something. And with the odds as they are, I cannot do without the Nereid, or Corbett.
What do you say to the captain of the Sirius?
Oh, I wish I had three more Pims and three more Siriuses. There would be your band of brothers for you. As it is, I shall have to humor Corbett to some degree. And how I shall manage it with Clomfort, I cannot tell.
Yes, an odd man is that. I've met his ship's surgeon, a much-what learned mad doctor. William McAdam had a number of valuable observations to make upon the states of mind amongst the otters.
Well, it's an ugly thing to say of any man, that you have doubts about his conduct.
But you have.
I cannot put them out of my mind, Stephen. Though the otter is like the royal yacht for perfection. Then Clomfort will dress his men like a pack of jack-pudding Merry Andrews. And that ignorant boasting. Admiral Bertie rates him high, mind. He's carried out some creditable raids in these waters, cut out any number of prizes from under the enemy's nose.
Yet you doubt him. We shall see. Then how do you rate the odds, Jack?
3-5 in the enemy's favor. Were we in our home waters, it would be very different. I shall reckon them more accurately once I catch sight of the French at sea.
Once you've had a brush with them, you mean?
No, once I've seen them. Even hull down on the horizon.
You could judge of their capabilities at so remote a view?
Of course. What a fellow you are, Stephen. A great deal can be told from the way another sailor sets his jib or goes about or flashes out his stunsails. Just as you could tell a great deal about a doctor from the way he whips off a leg.
Boadicea, September the 3rd. 22 degrees 50 south, 55 degrees 20 east. Sea moderate, winds ditto, south by east. At 3 p.m., squadron exercised the great guns by ship, shooting at targets.
4 minutes and 5 seconds, sir.
Did you see any hits, Mr. Seymour?
No, sir.
Which was the fastest? After us, of course.
Otter, sir. 3 and 5 minutes.
Hits?
None, sir. One ball did just skip over the target.
Very well, Mr. Seymour. Signal tack in succession as soon as the guns are housed.
Is your mind oppressed by melancholy thoughts, brother?
I hate this vile scheme of yours.
You have frequently mentioned it, and each time I have replied that the people and the information I seek are of essential importance.
The enemy has a large proportion of Irish troops among his forces on La Reunion. In addition, the slave population is very susceptible of inducement.
And what's more, the risk is negligible.
So you say.
I walk 200 yards along a strand. I call at a house of which I have an accurate drawing. I meet a man of inestimable value, receive my information, deliver these documents.
Their extreme tenuity renders them edible.
As tradition doth require, I walk back to the boat and thence to your swift-sailing machine. I join you with the blessing for breakfast.
And yet, not so many years ago, I had to fetch you out of Port Mahon after just such a mission.
Minorca was entirely different.
You were more dead than alive.
I had been undermined at home. Here, the possibility does not exist.
These inshore waters are hellish dangerous, too. Surf, reefs.
Captain Clonfert knows the shores very well, Commodore.
But so does the coast know him, sir. It needs but a fishing boat or a viso or watchman on the cliffs to see the otter standing in.
I do not see that there is anyone else better suited.
No, sir. But I shall give Clonfert absolute orders to return immediately if he cannot at once make out his landing. And Stephen, if the scheme goes wrong, I cannot land a party to take you off again.
You would be mad yourself to attempt any such thing. Jack, would it be uncivil at all to remind you that time waits for no man? This also applies, they tell me, to the tide.
Hope to God they are right. Good morning, Stephen. You look as pleased as punch. The trip is to your liking, I hope and trust.
Most delightful, I thank you. Look.
Well, it is a prodigious fine egg, to be sure.
Nothing less, Jack, than the concrete evidence of the albatross's gigantic love.
Light along breakfast for the doctor. Bear a hand there.
Other things I have with me, but nothing, nothing in comparison. This, for instance. This is no more than a vulgar pole parrot of the common green or West African species. It is also too loquacious for its own good. The cloth bag, on the other hand, contains some of the finest coffee I have ever tasted.
Ah, you are the saviour, Stephen.
I find it grows to great advantage upon La Reunion.
Good morning, Commodore.
Good morning, sir.
As I say, loquacious to a fault.
You did not spend all your time ashore birds nesting, I collect.
A straightforward piece of routine, as I told you. Perfectly simple.
But fruitful, I hope.
Oh, yes, Mr. Farquhar, my interlocutor I take to be a wholly reliable source. Exceptionable only in his prolonged retention of this indiscreet fowl. The man has given me a clear notion of the military aspect, which I do believe to be a true statement of the enemy's position. I'm not without hope that it'll give you pleasure, Jack.
Where do we strike?
St. Paul. There we will find the frigate Caroline with her two most recently captured Indiamen. Her inward parts are alleged to require some attention that will keep her there for perhaps a fortnight.
Where are the enemy land forces?
At various points, 20 and even 30 miles apart over difficult and mountainous country.
The defences are St. Paul?
Batteries and fortifications mounting. Wait, let me see. 9 and 8 is 17. I write 7, retain 1. 5 and 5, 10. With the 1 retain, mounting 117 guns. This rude sketch shows their approximate position.
The thing is practicable.
This is the disposition of the troops.
300 or 400 soldiers from Rodriguez would tip the scale.
They could not hold the place against the enemy's 3,000.
That is not the intention, sir. We take the ships, and to cut them out, we must take the batteries.
You'll forgive me, Jack, for laboring the obvious when I say that celerity is everything.
Well, that depends upon getting the soldiers on Rodriguez to move at once.
Lose not a minute, then.
How delighted we all are to see you coming in, sir.
Colonel Keating! Aubrey, commanding the Mauritius squadron.
You'll not remember me, sir, but I was at a dinner given in your honour in Calcutta 4 years ago.
Certainly I remember you.
After your magnificent defence of the China fleet.
I'm very happy to see you again.
Likewise, sir. We have been so cruelly bored on this dismal rock, reduced to tortoise races. Nothing to shoot save guinea fowl.
Then I believe I can offer you some better targets, Colonel.
I could be broke for stirring, you know.
That might make a man hesitate.
Hesitate as the officer commanding the company's troops on Rodriguez. Not as Harry Keating. It was never imagined that I should move before the monsoon when the main body arrives.
I cannot wait for them. Still less for help from the Cape.
Then the company loves you, sir, like a son. So I might equally well be broke for not falling in with your plan of campaign.
Well, I see no difficulty then.
But for this question of landing through the surf.
Well, I cannot pretend to be well acquainted myself with the western side of La Réunion. Captain Corbett.
300 days in the year, sir, the wind stays in the southeast. A landing north of St. Paul in such an event will be as easy as kiss my hand.
I have to tell you that my men are not clever in boats.
Lord Clomfort?
Even with a westerly wind, sir, I would undertake to set 1,000 men safe on shore. I know a sheltered cove hard by the St. Giles Inlet.
Welcome.
Pointe de Galais is the better place.
Corbett, that is 7 miles from St. Paul.
A surer spot and an easy march.
Of 3 hours and more when time will be of the essence.
Commodore Aubrey is likely to attach more weight to the opinion of a post-captain with a real knowledge of these waters, Lord Clonfert.
The St. Giles Inlet is the obvious choice.
No one but a blockhead would attempt anything other than the Pointe de Galais.
My native pilot knows the gaps in the reefs.
A captain who relies upon an escaped slave.
That slave, sir, has taken me where you could not go.
Commodore Aubrey, many years of service have I spent upon this station, this war and the last. I think I have the advantage of a junior commander, sir.
My choice will accord with yours, Aubrey. If you will forgive me, I will prepare my men to strike camp.
Of course, Colonel. Captain Corbett.
Sir?
We will fix upon your landing place. You will oblige me by agreeing with Colonel Keating about the transporting of his men aboard the Nereid. Now, if you please.
At once, sir.
Lord Clomfort.
Sir?
I am exceedingly concerned that this display of ill feeling should have taken place in the Colonel's presence. You forget the respect due to senior officers, sir. This must not occur again.
There's the strange look about you.
A strange feeling, too. Keating's troops have 7 miles to march. And all we can do in the meantime is to stand in quietly under topsails for St. Paul.
Hard the waiting.
And long. I've been watching the hourglass since we reduced sail in the middle watch.
Yeah. The long journey of the sand. Millions of grains tumbling till the top is empty. Another bell. Turn the glass. Grain by grain.
But so far, the timing has been perfect. Corbett will have just enough light to see.
You dislike the man.
I believe in his knowledge of the coast. The dust will soon begin to fly, and what I shall do is just lie there in St. Paul's Road. This has never happened to me before, Stephen. The other men will do the work. I find I don't relish it.
But you will have given the orders, my dear.
Yes. And to be sure, Sophie would approve my safety.
She would also beg you to drink your coffee while it is hot.
This is your high command for you. I'm not so sure if it is really leadership.
The enemy fort is that way, at the double!
Otter signalling, sir. Enemy in sight, bearing due east.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Reply, stand in. And to the squadron, make more sail.
Stand in and make more sail, sir.
I hope the wind will not come foul at last. You'd better go to the cockpit, Doctor. In 5 minutes, we shall be within range of the enemy batteries.
We'll see you in the town square, then.
Shot the bowlings there!
Sir.
Note the time! 8:17.
Shall we reply, sir?
No, Mr. Johnson! I will not risk hitting our own people on the dock just behind us! Ah! Admirable practice!
Carpenter reports 4 foot of water in the well, sir!
Ship the pumps, Mr. Seymour! As soon as the church and the tower there are in line, we will go about! Mr. Johnson! To the squadron! Tack in succession at the gun! And then... close engagement!
Their line is breaking! Now, boys! Follow them up the hill! Hunt them down!
Breaker again!
If you please, sir. The last shore battery has struck its colours.
The Caroline cannot survive this pounding much longer, grounded as she is. Look at Pim going at her!
Carpenter reports 6 foot of water in the well and holding, sir.
She will do, Mr. Seymour!
Cease fire! The Caroline has struck her colours, sir.
Cease firing, Mr. Johnson!
Cease firing, sir!
Cease firing! Cease firing there!
Mr. Seymour, pass the word to my coxswain. My barge to be launched, and my compliments to Dr. Maturin. We are going ashore.
Give you joy, sir.
And you, Colonel. And you. You have done wonder, sir. I believe the place is ours.
For the moment, sir. But the enemy is rallying on the hills above the town. My scouts tell me that a column from Saint-Denis is likely to be here by nightfall.
Then we must go to work at the double. The Caroline must be refloated and made sound. Two Indiamen have been knocked about a little, but I trust their captains will have them ready for sea before long.
As a matter of urgency, Commodore, we must find the mayor and the chief of police.
A glorious good morning to you, Doctor. Mr. Parker.
And to you, Colonel.
Might we beg an officer and a few soldiers, sir, to help us, sir?
Certainly you may, gentlemen. I should like to hazard that you politicos will be pleased with us.
In what other manner beyond the winning of the battle?
My men have behaved like lambs, sir. Not a maiden has been put to the blush so far, nor so much as a chamber pot looted.
I'm glad to hear it. It is of the first political consequence that St. Paul's inhabitants be well treated.
Any looting, rape, or disorderly conduct will have the most prejudicial effect.
Orbes constituit aetas, hora dissolve it.
They shall be Sunday-going lambs, gentlemen. I will answer for them.
Oh, Jesus! My God!
That will be your friend, Lord Clonfert. His marines took 3 batteries in a most gallant style. They are blowing them up with great dispatch.
Lord Clonfert is a fine, enterprising officer.
Very active. I commend him.
Indeed.
Commodore Aubrey, here is a list of the government buildings it would be a great service to destroy.
Perhaps you could set the estimable Lord Clonfert onto the task.
As you wish, sir.
The tax gatherers' records here are particularly important. If their destruction does not render us beloved, then the Bourbonnais are hard to please. It is well begun, Jack.
I will not say I'm sanguine.
That might not be very clever, no, but you have deprived the enemy of a fine frigate.
Not to say near 120 guns and his fortifications. Powder and shot to supply us the rest of several campaigns.
Do you recall at all how I asked you some weeks ago how you set the odds?
I do.
You said then 3-5 against. Now?
Evens. But soon, Stephen. Soon, I intend to swing them decisively to our favor.
In The Mauritius Command by Patrick O'Brien, dramatized by Roger Daines, Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb, Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Delane, Governor Farker, David Rintoul, Lieutenant Colonel Keating, Thomas Arnold, Lord Clonfert, Sam Dale, Captain Corbett, Christian Rodsker, Lieutenant Seymour, Max Dowler, Midshipman George Johnson, Niasha Hatendi, Dr. McAdam, Sean Baker, Captain Pym, Brian Bowles, Mrs. Williams, Joanna Munro, and Sophie, Sally Orrock. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Bruce Young.
And The Mauritius Command continues at the same time next week here on BBC Radio 4. The BBC News is coming up shortly, and then James Naughtie and readers talk to one of Ireland's finest writers, Jennifer Johnston, in Book Club. Now in her 80s, Jennifer has been called the quiet woman of Irish literature. Her distinguished career has spanned more than 40 years and has netted the Whitbread Prize among her many awards. That's Book Club in a couple minutes.